Campbell on second down and 5.5. Looks right. Comes back to the left. Going long for Gordon. He's out there. And he caught the ball at the 20, at the 15, 10, 5. Touchdown!
Unbelievable catch. Unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily. Driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap. Dalton back. Looking near side. Throws it. Picked off. And an open run. It's Joe Hayden. And he's in. Touchdown.
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagura.
How could it be a bad day? I mean, Nathan Zagura, the notorious VIC, Vic Carucci. We just have feasted. Thanks courtesy of Rosewood Grill.
Like kings.
And yes, like kings. Man. We've eaten till we could eat no more. And it was phenomenal. They will be bringing the round table. Rosewood Grill will bring us the round table today with Jim Donovan and Doug Deacon from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. That will come your way here in the first hour of the show, about 1:30 p.m.
Yep.
We'll have the voice of the Steelers, in a sense. Ron Cook from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette will be with us at 2 p.m. Eastern. Ooh, Gerard Cherry at 2:40 as well. A lot to get to. It's really now time to focus everything on this game against the Pittsburgh Steelers this Sunday. And it has the makings of an old-school AFC North slugfest. And one of the reasons I say that is because the weather forecast is for extreme cold this Sunday at First Energy Stadium. And wanted to just urge the fans who are going to be in attendance and are going to be loud, dress warmly. It is going to be cold. We're talking in the 20s or below. And just to let you know that under the new NFL bag policy, fans are allowed to bring blankets to the game by draping them over their shoulders while entering the stadium. If you do that, follow that procedure, it will certainly help everybody get in and keep the lines moving there at First Energy Stadium this weekend. But it is going to be cold. It is going to be tough, I think, therefore, on maybe some of the passing games, especially if it's a little bit windy and cold. So this is going to be an interesting game and really kind of test both of these teams, because neither the Steelers nor the Browns have been able to run the ball in a very effective manner the last couple of games.
No, the Steelers have no running game, and that sounds familiar, I know, to Browns fans. But the Steelers, you know, their M.O. had been the run the football and have that power sort of attack. If you watch what they did against the Detroit Lions on Sunday, Nathan, you saw a team run a no-huddle offense for the better part of the first half. Ben Roethlisberger running the no-huddle is not typical of what that Steeler team does. It was effective against the Lions. I'm expecting they're going to try to do some variation of that this week, because it was successful for them in that game. And when you look at big, you know, defenses that have good front sevens, especially strong defensive line, and that is the Browns defense as well as it is the Lions defense, you know, I think that's the sort of thing you want to do. Wear down the big guys and try to get people moving as much as possible and keep that pace and that tempo going. And I was impressed with Ben Roethlisberger. I didn't think of him as that no-huddle kind of quarterback the way you see Peyton Manning or even Tom Brady and some other quarterbacks run that sort of offense. You're right. The weather, I think, is conducive to more of a physical game. And I think this is where the Browns would have an advantage, at least the ability to run the ball successfully. Now, I'm not saying that there is a back on this Browns team that gives me the confidence that they can have a lot of success running the football. Let's be straight about that. But I do think the effort could pay off in a big way, or at least in enough of a way. Let me rephrase that. It can pay off in enough of a way to lend that early balance that I think is going to be critical for the Browns offense.
It is going to be very important to have that, because you're still going to need to throw the football, and we've seen the Steelers team give up some big plays in recent weeks. I talked about it yesterday. 5 touchdowns of 19 or more yards, 3 from over 40. So it is certainly possible to hit that big play and establish that coming off a play action. For the season, the average length of a passing touchdown scored against this Pittsburgh Steelers defense this season, believe it or not, 31.8 yards, second highest in the NFL. So this is an opportunity for Flash Gordon, hopefully for our guy Jordan Cameron down the seam, to make one of those big plays after the establishment of a physical run game up front early. And we saw last week, when the conditions were bad, in that game for the Steelers and the Detroit Lions. It was the physicality of the Detroit Lions in their run game that allowed them to have success on the ground. Joik Bell came in and kind of was the big hammer. He ran 9 times for 49 yards, 5.4 a pop. And on the other side, Le'Veon Bell struggled. 18 carries, 36 yards, 2 yards a carry.
Yeah, I think that's the real key here is that you don't want to let a team that, much like they're thinking about the Browns, you don't let a team that doesn't run the ball well find success on the ground and create that balance. It's tough enough to deal with Ben Roethlisberger with all the time he can buy in the pocket, with all the movement he can create, and the inability to bring him down because he is so big and so strong.
Right.
And to talk about some of the ways the Browns would achieve this defensively, you look at their front seven. They have to manufacture a pass rush. They don't generally go after you, or even genuinely go after you with four guys and try to predicate their pressure on that package. They do it with multiple people rushing the quarterback. It does involve linebackers, it involves safeties, it involves cornerbacks, and it has to be that widespread and that diverse because there really aren't four guys who just can give you that push. There really aren't two dominant ends who just come off the edge and get after you. And, you know, if you think about the Kansas City Chiefs as being a team that has those kinds of players in Tom Bahali and Justin Houston, well, the fact is that those guys haven't done much in the last three games, including the one they played against the Browns. So even the so-called dominant edge teams that have edge rushers haven't been able to sustain that, and I guess that's could be the function of the schedule, could be the function of whatever they're not doing as well as they did before, and it could be just the function of, again, really good blockers who are doing their job.
Yeah, and listen, one of the things that Ray Horton said earlier today in his press conference was getting to Ben Roethlisberger is only part of the equation. Getting him on the ground is actually the true challenge with him, and that's one of the things he does so well is buy time, etc. And one of the guys he's been buying time and finding of late that I think it is very important. We talk about Joe Hayden has done it. It's not even worth mentioning. He's going to do whatever it is he has to do to take away the opponent's number one receiver.
Right.
We've seen it week in, week out. But it's the secondary guys that have been killing the Browns. And the guy that I am the most concerned about, the guy that I want to stop the most, is Jericho Cotchery. And I'll tell you why. Jericho Cotchery has become the touchdown maker for Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger in the red zone this season. He has been very active, very involved. 69 pass attempts, 11 touchdowns. 7 of those 11 red zone touchdowns from Ben Roethlisberger have gone to Jericho Cotchery. Jericho Cotchery has been targeted 13 times inside the 20, 8th most in the NFL. 7 touchdowns, 2nd most. He's been the best, really, one of the best red zone receivers in the entire NFL. And amongst receivers who've been targeted more than 10 times in the red zone, only Dez Bryant has been a more efficient touchdown scorer, 6 scores on 11 targets. Jericho Cotchery is going to be the key. Force Emmanuel Sanders, force Heath Miller to try to beat you in the red area in the passing game. And interestingly enough, Antonio Brown on the season, for as good as he's played, 13 red zone targets, no touchdowns this year. Cotchery has been the touchdown maker, 5 scores in the last 3 games. He's the guy that I think the Browns need to take care of when it gets down to the red zone.
You mentioned Antonio Brown, and I'll say this about him. You're right, the damage that he's done doesn't quite equal what we've seen from Cotchery, especially of late. Cotchery had that 20-yard touchdown, big touchdown against the Lions this past week. But Brown is such a fast target, such a fast guy, that he, I think, could be a challenge for Joe Hayden just because of the speed factor. I think A.J. Green, a different style altogether. I think a longer, taller guy, strong guy like Green is... I want this to sound right. It's a little bit easier for Joe Hayden, who is a more compact athlete, to kind of get into his midsection and kind of control the game that way with him and kind of force him and misdirect him in certain ways because Joe can kind of get into him. When Joe is dealing with a guy like Brown, where they're sort of head up physically, they're pretty much the same guy, it's that step or two that Brown can get off the line. Now, Joe's a very fast guy. We know that. But Brown, I think, has the capability of running away from even faster corners. So that would be the part of the matchup that might worry me, believe it or not, a little more than the A.J. Green matchup. Just my thoughts.
Interesting. He did score on him last year. There was an out play, a quick out to Antonio Brown, where he made a spin move on Hayden and went for, I believe, an 80-yard touchdown, around 80-yard, 70-yard touchdown. So it has happened in the past. I just think the way that Joe Hayden is playing right now, he's going to get it done. And he's done it against different type of guys, because Mike Wallace should have been that similar type of player, similar size, speed combination, and he certainly has done very, very well against him. You know, it's interesting. We'll see what happens. I think Hayden gets the better of Antonio Brown.
I do, too. I expect him to. I'm just saying that would be my concern in the matchup.
Sure. Yeah. The leaks that need to be plugged are the ones that have allowed, even with Joe Hayden playing completely out of his mind, playing great football, locking down number one receiver after number one receiver, it's the leaks that need to be plugged that have still allowed 14 passing touchdowns in the last five games. They've still allowed 14 passing touchdowns last five games with Joe Hayden playing as well as any corner in the NFL.
And I talked with a guy from Pittsburgh this morning about that, and he basically said, so when you look at the Browns' 4-6 record, where are the problems? And he said, do they just stop at the quarterback play inconsistency? Do they stop at the fact that they don't run the ball well? And, man, it looks like they've given up a lot of points. Is the defense really not as good as the numbers show? And I heard that question, and I found it interesting because, again, it's outside perception, and people not necessarily they're not following it in the detailed way that we follow it. But it's true that this team has given up more big plays than you'd want it to. It's true that that's contributed to the losses that they've had, the four out of the last five games that they've lost. It's not necessarily true that this last game in particular, I mean, this game at Cincinnati, which was such a bizarre sort of the way it unfolded in ways that I think allowed the Bengals to either work on short field or straight up take a block punt and a fumbled reception and take them back for touchdowns. And, of course, that's against you, but it's not against the defense per se. And I think those are the kinds of questions that you raise or the details when you're looking at it. And I'm not making any apologies for the Browns defense. They were not satisfied with what happened at Cincinnati. And I did a piece for ClevelandBrowns.com about DeQuell Jackson basically calling out teammates, going into a meeting, and he told me about this. We didn't get into the specifics of what he said, but he said, we hold people accountable, not just him, but the other leaders on the team. And he felt Monday was the day that had to be brought up because of all that had gone on in Cincinnati, and that it was time to kind of lay it out there and say, that isn't what we do as a football team. That's not how we function, and we can't. And he also tried to create a message that said, everything we want to do is still in front of us, and I think, of course, mathematically, technically, it is. How much do we believe in that? You know, you go back and forth on that one, or at least I do.
A much better answer this weekend.
We'll get a much better answer Sunday. But I think it was interesting to note that it was positive reinforcement, but also reinforcement. And he said, for those who didn't get his message, who aren't affected by what he said that he kind of said, you don't just forget about those guys. He said, you better be. It was basically step in line and get with the program if your head isn't totally in this thing in the way it needs to be. I'm glad that came out from him. We talked about the leadership thing earlier this week.
There's tons of it on DeQuell, the defensive side.
There is. But I say, DeQuell Jackson truly fitting or living up to that role and fitting.
He is. And that's it. Listen, the defense, yes, the points per game are higher than you would expect given how well the defense has played. The Browns are giving up 23.8 points per game. The Steelers, by the way, giving up 24.5. So they're not, you know, they're not playing lockdown defense either this year. It is a matter of, you know, yes, they've given up some touchdowns, but having the leadership, having DeQuell Jackson step up like he is fantastic. Joe Hayden, and we've heard a lot of talk about it. We've heard it from Joe himself. We've heard it from defensive coordinator Ray Horton that Joe, you know, when we talked about it, remember in the preseason when he was here and he had just gotten married and seemed to be settling down. And he even said, you know, the fact that I'm married, I'm not going out, I'm not partying, I'm staying home, I'm maturing, I'm focused on football. And it's led to an even better performance for a guy who's already, by the way, been very, very good. So there are leaders on the defense, and people are accountable, and nobody wanted that game to go the way that it went against Cincinnati. No. And I think what eats at them, it's one thing when you go out there and you give it your best and you execute your best and you lose. At some point, when you're a man, you look in the mirror and you say, okay, I know that I did what I could do and we lost. The Browns don't feel that way coming off of that Cincinnati game. The fans don't feel that way after watching that game. It's not, Cincinnati's not the better team per se. They're 1-1 on the season, and the Browns helped Cincinnati to beat them with costly mistakes.
I think Cincinnati proved on a day when the Browns weren't up to the challenge of stepping up to what they needed to be, they were better.
Right.
They were because better than what the Browns were didn't take a whole lot. All it took was don't make as many mistakes as they did. And of course the Bengals made their share of mistakes. If I had gone into that game, we talked about it on the show. I wrote it on ClevelandBrowns.com. If you get Andy Dalton to throw two picks, he didn't even have to throw the three that he had thrown the week before or in each of those previous games. Two picks would have been enough for a victory. So I thought that formula was right. I was way off. But what it told me was the Browns were – when the Browns make more mistakes and play that kind of football, nobody is bad enough to lose to them. And that's what in your context that the Bengals aren't really a strong-looking team to lead a division, I agree with that. But if you're facing a team that was the Browns that game, if that's the game the Browns are going to play,
they're not beating anybody.
Then you beat nobody. You the weakest, worst opponent, the Jaguars. You won't beat Jacksonville next week with a game like that.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure any team in the NFL wins in a game like that.
So as I look at them, and the question is, are they that bad? I mean,
no.
did they hit their lowest watermark? And I want to believe that. But what I hope hasn't happened is that they've reached their natural level as a team. I think Jason Campbell, that's the wild card in all this, because there's going to be something. We know right now you can officially call it erratic. You can see extremes of really strong performance against Baltimore, a struggling performance against the Bengals. And from everything I've gathered in this building this week, there hasn't been a conclusion that the Bengals, that Mike Zimmer threw that much of a great defensive game plan to screw him up.
No, listen, Jason Campbell had played the two best games that he had ever played back-to-back in his nine-year NFL career against Kansas City and against the Ravens, statistically speaking, from quarterback rating, touchdown-interception ratio, etc. He had never played two better games. There was going to be a regression to the mean, and we saw a little bit of a regression to the mean with Jason Campbell, but as I said yesterday, and I'll say it again, one thing that gives me hope is that he seems to be the kind of guy that can bounce back. In games where he's thrown multiple interceptions, the last five times he's done it, he threw no interceptions the following game, and four of them just one in one of them. So he's proven that he can bounce back in a big way from a down performance, and he's going to need to for the Browns to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, as they should, as I believe they should, this Sunday at First Energy Stadium. When we return here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, we're getting the boys together for the Roundtable, which is brought to you by Rosewood Grill. Jim Donovan, the voice of the Cleveland Browns, and Doug Deacon from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network will be in studio helping to preview Steelers-Browns.